Welcome to the deep dive, everybody. You know, we're going deep, deep into the world of female serial killers. You sent us these excerpts from Dark Legacies.
Oh, yeah.
And wow, these stories are intense. We're going to be examining five notorious figures, and each one I think is more chilling than the last.
Oh, for sure.
So get ready to explore the lives of a bloodthirsty countess, a soap-making mama.
A soap-making mama.
A wrestler with a hidden dark side.
Wow.
A cruel, cruel noblewoman, and a classic black widow.
What I think is so fascinating about these cases is they challenge our preconceived notions about who serial killers are, right? We often associate serial killers with men, but these women really show us that evil has no gender.
I know, it's true. And as we kind of unpack these stories, I think it's important for us to, you know, consider the historical and societal context. How did the times they live in actually shape their actions? You know, for instance, our first subject, Elizabeth Báthory, the Blood Countess, was a noblewoman in 16th century Hungary.
Right.
And she's infamous for allegedly bathing in the blood of virgins to retain her youth.
Oh, my God. You know, think about that for a moment. Upwards of 650 victims are attributed to Báthory.
Wow.
If even a fraction of that is true, you know, the scale of her operation was enormous. It really makes you wonder. How much power did women truly wield in that era? Could she have operated on this scale alone? Did she have accomplices? Or did others just turn a blind eye?
Yeah.
And these questions, I think, force us to look beyond the individual and examine the societal structures that enable such horrors.
I think it's a chilling thought. And it raises another question. How much of her story is actually rooted in fact?
Yeah.
And how much is embellished legend?
Yeah.
History, as we know, is often written by the victors.
Exactly. And sometimes those victors have their own agendas. So, you know, we talked about a figure of immense power and privilege. Let's turn to Leonarda Cianciulli, the soap maker of Correggio. This one is straight out of a horror story, you know?
Yeah.
Just picture this. A mother, seemingly motivated by a warped sense of maternal love, murders three women during World War II. Then she transforms their remains into soup and tea cakes.
Okay, hold on. Stop.
Soap.
Soap and tea cakes. Seriously, this is where it gets truly disturbing for me.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about wartime Italy, a period of immense fear and uncertainty. Is it possible that her desperation to protect her son from the horrors of war, you know, drove her to these unthinkable acts?
It's a chilling reminder of the lengths people go to when driven by fear, right?
Mm-hmm.
However, the question remains, was this truly an act of maternal love, or was there something far darker at play?
Yeah, that's a good question. Let's switch gears for a moment and consider another killer who seemingly targeted the vulnerable,
mm-hmm.
Juana Barraza, known as the Mata Viejitas, the old lady killer. The irony here is striking. Barraza was a former wrestler, someone you'd associate with strength, yet she chose to prey on the elderly.
Right. Well, Barraza's personal history might offer some answers, right? She was reportedly a victim of severe maternal abuse. So this raises the possibility that her crimes were driven by a twisted desire for revenge, targeting a group that represented her own trauma.
Yeah, that's a deeply disturbing connection. And it gets even more unsettling when you consider her methods, you know, strangling, bludgeoning, both intensely personal and violent.
Yeah.
Those methods suggest something more than just eliminating a victim, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely. It speaks to a level of rage and aggression that goes far beyond simply ending a life, right? There's an element of wanting to inflict pain, to exert power and dominance.
Now, from a former wrestler to a noblewoman in 18th century Russia.
Oh.
Our next case is Darya Saltykova.
Okay.
Also known as Saltychika.
Saltychika.
She's infamous for abusing and murdering at least 38 of her serfs, primarily young women.
This case, I think, really starkly illustrates the insidious nature of unchecked power, right?
Yeah.
Saltykova, due to her status, was effectively above the law.
Right.
And her reign of terror lasted years. Think about that. Years of abuse before a single brave servant risked everything to expose her crimes. So this begs the question, how common was such cruelty within that system?
Right.
And what does it tell us about the safeguards or lack thereof that allowed such atrocities to continue?
It's a sobering reminder that power, without accountability, can corrupt absolutely.
Right.
And it took just one courageous act to bring Saltykova down. Imagine if more people had spoken up sooner.
I know.
How many lives could have been saved?
It just highlights the profound impact that even one voice can have, right?
Yeah.
Speaking truth to power, no matter how daunting, is sometimes the only way to stop these cycles of abuse.
Right. And finally, we come to Marilyn Munster.
Okay.
The Black Widow.
The Black Widow.
This case, I think, fits that classic femme fatale image.
Totally.
You know, charming, deceptive, and deadly, marrying a string of wealthy men and securing life insurance policies before they met with suspicious, untimely demises.
Munster's story is a long con played out over decades, right? Imagine the mental fortitude required to maintain that facade, to meticulously plan and execute these murders, all while appearing innocent.
Right. And the method itself, poison, is so calculated.
Yeah.
So discreet.
Yeah.
It perfectly embodies the Black Widow persona.
Precisely. The choice of poison speaks to a level of premeditation that is chilling, right? She wasn't driven by a sudden outburst of rage. Mm. This was cold, calculated greed. So we've begun our descent, I think, into the world of female serial killers. From bloodbaths and soap making to wrestling rings and poison, these women each left a trail of terror and questions in their wake.
These stories are disturbing, for sure.
Yeah.
But the real question is, what can we learn from them?
Right.
What insights can we glean about the dark side of human nature? What does it tell us about the societies they operated within? Stay tuned for part two, where we'll delve deeper into the psychology of these killers,
yes,
the historical context, and the societal factors that might have contributed to their crimes. We'll try to understand not just what they did, but why. See you soon. Welcome back to The Deep Dive. As we continue to explore these chilling cases, I can't help but feel a sense of unease. You know, these women were masters of deception, blending into society while hiding their true nature. It makes you wonder, who can we really trust?
Yeah, no, that's a natural reaction. I think these stories really force us to confront the darker side of humanity, right?
Right.
However, I think it's also crucial to remember that these cases are outliers, right? They don't represent the vast majority of women or even criminals in general.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. It's like we're looking into a warped mirror,
right?
Seeing a distorted reflection of humanity. But that's part of what makes it so fascinating, right?
Yeah.
It's trying to understand the psychology behind these crimes.
Yeah.
The motivations that push these women to such extremes.
Precisely. And I think that's where things get really interesting, right? There's no single profile, no one size fits all explanation for why someone becomes a serial killer, right? Each case is unique, shaped by individual psychology, societal influences, and even just plain chance.
Right. Remember Elizabeth Bathory? Some historians believe her crimes were exaggerated.
Oh, yeah.
Possibly even fabricated by her enemies to seize her power and wealth, right? It's a good reminder that history isn't always objective truth.
Yeah, we have to be cautious about accepting historical accounts at face value.
Right.
Especially when they involve figures like Bathory, who were both powerful and controversial. There's always more to the story than meets the eye.
I agree. So, for example, Leonarda Cianciulli, the soap maker.
Right.
While her actions were horrific.
Yes.
We can't ignore the context of World War II, right?
Right. I mean, that's true.
The world was in chaos.
Yeah.
People were desperate, driven by fear and uncertainty. It makes you wonder if her case was an anomaly, or if there were other instances where wartime desperation led to extreme actions.
Well, it's a question worth considering, right?
Yeah.
I mean, Cianciulli's belief that her actions were necessary to protect her son. I mean, it's chilling, but it also provides a glimpse into that psychological impact of war on individuals.
Yeah.
However, you know, trauma is a recurring theme in many of these cases.
Like with Juana Barraza, right?
Exactly.
If the reports of her being abused by her mother are true,
mm-hmm.
could that trauma have manifested itself in her crimes? Is it possible she was seeking a twisted form of revenge against those who represented her own pain?
It's certainly a possibility, right? I mean, trauma can create these deep-seated psychological wounds that can lead to, you know, a range of outcomes. However, not everyone who experiences trauma becomes a serial killer, which is why, you know, understanding the interplay of various factors is so crucial.
It's like a complex puzzle with multiple pieces, right?
Right, yeah.
You have these pre-existing vulnerabilities.
Yeah.
Then life throws in some additional stressors.
Right.
And suddenly you have a potentially dangerous mix.
Yeah.
What are some of the other pieces of this puzzle? Are there any common personality traits among serial killers?
Well, some researchers suggest certain traits like, you know, a lack of empathy or a high tolerance for risk-taking might make someone more susceptible to violence.
Okay.
Others highlight, you know, environmental factors like poverty or exposure to violence as potential contributors.
Right.
But again, it's a complex interplay. We can't isolate a single factor and say, this is what causes someone to become a serial killer.
Right, right. And what strikes me is the level of control these women had over their victims. right? These weren't just random acts of violence. These women were carefully selecting, manipulating, and often prolonging their victim's suffering.
Yeah, that's a very astute observation.
Thanks.
I think this need for power and dominance is a really significant aspect of these crimes, right?
Yeah.
For some serial killers, the act of killing itself is secondary to the feeling of control it gives them.
Right.
It's about asserting their will, proving their superiority.
It's like a twisted game to them, playing God with people's lives. And it's even more unsettling considering many of them targeted those perceived as weak or vulnerable.
Mm.
The elderly, young girls,
right.
Even their own husbands.
Absolutely, right. It's a perversion of those traditional notions of femininity and caregiving, right?
Yeah.
They exploited those societal expectations to access their victims, lulling them into a false sense of security, right?
Right.
It's a chilling reminder that appearances can be deceiving,
and
evil can hide behind the most unexpected masks.
We've discussed the psychology of the killers, the historical context, societal factors.
Right.
But what about the victims?
Oh, that's a really good point.
Their stories are often overshadowed by the notoriety of the perpetrators.
Yeah.
What can we learn from their experiences?
Yeah, I mean, that's an incredibly important point. We must remember that each victim was a real person, right?
Right.
With a life, dreams, and loved ones.
Right.
And their absence creates a ripple effect of pain and grief, right? So we can't bring them back. But we can honor their memory by acknowledging their suffering and striving to understand those systemic issues that contributed to their vulnerability.
Yeah. And the ripple effect, I think, goes beyond individual loss.
Right. Of course. Yeah.
It impacts families.
Communities. Even society as a whole.
The fear, the mistrust, the sense of vulnerability. These are wounds that can take generations to heal.
It's crucial to recognize that. Yeah. The profound impact of these crimes extend far beyond the immediate victims.
Yeah. It makes you wonder, why are we so fascinated by stories about serial killers?
Yeah.
Particularly female ones.
That's a question that has intrigued me for years.
Yeah.
Perhaps part of it is the shock value, right? The idea that someone who looks and acts like us could be capable of such monstrous acts, right? It's both terrifying and intriguing.
It's like looking into the abyss.
Yeah.
And seeing a reflection of our own hidden potential for darkness. But on a more practical level, maybe we hope that by understanding them, we can somehow protect ourselves from becoming victims.
That's certainly a possibility, right? The desire to understand, to find the missing piece of the puzzle that explains the inexplicable.
Right.
And let's not forget, the fear factor.
Yeah.
These stories tap into our primal anxieties about safety and security.
Yeah. It's a reminder that evil exists in the world.
Right.
And none of us are immune.
Right.
But there's also a strange sense of comfort in these stories, right?
Yeah.
By categorizing these killers as monsters, we reassure ourselves that good and evil are clearly defined.
It creates a false sense of security, though, because the reality is far more nuanced than that, right?
Right.
These were once ordinary people who, through a complex combination of factors, chose a path of darkness.
That's what's truly terrifying, right?
Yeah.
The realization that that line between good and evil isn't always clear, and that anyone, given the right circumstances, is capable of darkness. This has been a truly sobering conversation.
It has been.
And while exploring these dark legacies is unsettling, it's important to remember that we can't let the darkness consume us.
You're right. We have to remember the light, the good that still exists in the world,
right,
and work to protect it.
Okay, we'll be right back for the final part of our deep dive into the world of female serial killers. Welcome back to the deep dive.
Yeah.
As we wrap up our exploration of these dark legacies, I want to kind of revisit a question that's been lingering in my mind throughout this whole conversation. Are female serial killers fundamentally different from their male counterparts?
It's a fascinating question and one that's sparked a lot of debate. On the surface, it seems like their motives are often more intertwined with personal relationships and emotional turmoil.
Right. A lot of the cases that we've discussed involved, women targeting people they knew, family members, lovers, even friends. And their methods often seemed less overtly violent, like using poison or suffocation.
It's true that many female serial killers employ methods that, society traditionally views as more feminine,
right,
more subtle and deceptive, right? It kind of feeds into that Black Widow archetype we talked about earlier, but we have to be careful about drawing those hard lines.
That's a good point. I mean, look at Elizabeth Bathory.
Right.
If the accounts are even partially accurate, Her alleged crimes involved torture and brutality on a massive scale.
Yes.
That doesn't exactly fit the stereotype of feminine methods.
Exactly. And there are, you know, plenty of examples of women who defy those stereotypes.
Right.
Who are just as brutal and calculated as their male counterparts.
Right.
And on the flip side, there are, you know, plenty of male serial killers who exhibit traits typically associated with female offenders, like a focus on control and manipulation, or a preference for, you know, less violent methods.
So it seems like the lines are blurrier than we might initially assume. Maybe it's less about gender and more about, you know, individual psychology, specific life experiences, and a whole host of other contributing factors.
I think that's a much more accurate and nuanced way to approach this. Ultimately, you know, each case is unique, and we have to be wary of making these sweeping generalizations based solely on gender.
Okay. So if we're moving away from gender stereotypes,
yeah.
What are some key takeaways we should keep in mind when trying to understand female serial killers?
I think first and foremost, you know, we need to acknowledge their existence.
Right.
For a long time, the very idea of a female serial killer was almost taboo, something that clashed with our societal expectations of women.
Right.
But these cases, they force us to confront the reality that women are just as capable of violence as men, even if the ways in which they express it might differ.
Right. It challenges that idealized image of women as inherently nurturing and caring.
Right.
And by acknowledging that reality, we can start having more honest conversations about violence as a whole.
Precisely. Honest conversations about the factors that contribute to it, and most importantly, how we can prevent it.
You can't solve a problem you refuse to acknowledge,
yeah,
right? That leads to another key takeaway, I think. Understanding the context of these crimes.
Absolutely, yeah. Whether it's the historical context, like the limitations on women's power during, you know, Elizabeth Bathory's time, or the personal context of trauma, as with Leonarda Cianciulli and Hanna Barraza, we have to consider the circumstances that shaped these women's lives.
We can't just focus on the act itself.
Mm-hmm.
We need to kind of examine the web of relationships, the societal pressures,
mm-hmm.
the individual experiences that may have led them to that point.
Right. By examining those details, we might start to see patterns,
right.
Identify potential risk factors, and even develop strategies for intervention and prevention.
Yeah.
Because ultimately, the goal isn't just to understand these crimes, but to prevent them from happening in the first place.
One of the things that struck me most throughout this deep dive was the sheer variety of motives we encountered.
Yeah.
Everything from power and control to revenge and greed to, even in some cases, a warped sense of love and protection.
It really speaks to the immense complexity of the human psyche, right?
Yeah.
There's no easy answer,
right.
No single explanation for what drives someone to kill. It's this combination of nature and nurture, of individual choices influenced by societal pressures.
It's also a reminder that while these cases are extreme, we all have the capacity for darkness within us.
Yeah.
Right. The key is to recognize that darkness. Confront it and choose a different path.
Well said. As we conclude this exploration of, dark legacies, I hope our listeners will come away with a deeper understanding, not just of female serial killers,
right.
But of the human condition itself, the good, the bad, and the unsettling gray areas in between.
I think the most important question we can ask ourselves isn't why did they do it,
right.
But rather, what can we learn from this?
Yeah.
What can we do to create a world where these kinds of horrors are less likely to occur?
How can we better support those who are vulnerable, hold those in power accountable, and cultivate a society that truly values empathy, compassion, and justice?
Yeah, these are questions worth pondering.
They are.
Thank you for joining us on this journey into the dark side of humanity. We'll leave you with those questions to consider. Until next time, stay curious, stay compassionate, and stay safe.